So the problem I am interested in, and some others, is the Navier-Stokes equation driven by a force. This force is acts at some scale k sub f, and we all and it's fast, very fast, white in time, as they say. And this force is, and as we all know, we seem that we know that in three dimensions, the force generates small-scale structures, small-scale motions, it dissipates, and it dissipates the energy. However, in two dimensions, the situation is completely different. The energy goes into creation of the large scales, and the important point is that in two dimensions, the dissipation mechanism does not exist unless it is artificially artificially created by friction, by whatnot. But there is no viscous viscous dissipation here. So what people are trying to do is the following. So you have two points, x and x plus r, and the x axis is along along this r, and I will have to I will be interested in two components of the velocity field. One is longitudinal along r, and one which will always be u, and one perpendicular to this r, which will always be v. And we're interested in the in velocity differences, and we would like to define in general the structure functions, which are correlation functions S and M. The first index stands for the power of delta U, and the second index stands for the power of delta V. And we assume, this is an assumption, that there is a scaling and the exponents associated with these correlation functions. Now, there are some exact, there are a few exact statements. And the exact statements are that delta U cube, S3 sub 0, is minus epsilon R in 3D, and is plus epsilon R in 2D. But there is one more statement, which is absolute, which is exact as the first one, is that the correlation function S12, delta U, delta V square, is also proportional to R in 3D and minus R in 2D. Also, we know that VU correlation functions are zeros, and these are more or less all exact relations which are known. Now, the thing which is of particular interest for this conference is the behavior of the probability density functions, and this one is for delta V normalized by delta V RMS. At large scales, it is roundish. It's almost Gaussian, but it's here it's a little bit more narrower than Gaussian, but I showed this picture because Srini plotted here the behavior of a tip of a very top. So this point is of a very top, and then it also plotted the p of zero as a function of r, and there is a very nice curve. It very nice curve. This p of zero at the origin goes up with the exponent minus 0.6, which and 0.06, and which means that if it's it will go on, the thing will develop a cusp. This is a new result. I don't believe it. I don't believe it was published before. Oh no. This one is. You just made it for me, yes. Now, of course, we're also interested in the exponents and so on and so forth. One more thing which I would like to mention, which is of interest, is the so-called refined similarity hypothesis, which was proposed by Kolmogorov on a purely statistical basis. And he introduced this dissipation rate averaged over a ball of radius r, and he connected delta u cube with this epsilon sub r in this way, and this was and it seems that this relation is quite well supported experimentally and numerically, and I suspect she will talk about it. So now the theories. So the first theories were based on Weyl's diagrammatic expansion, and the problems were Galilean divergence and Galilean invariance. So the Navier-Stokes equations are Galilean invariant, and this is why it's if one runs a perturbation expansion, it's not easy to preserve this Galilean invariant, which is an exact property. Second trouble, of course, so even when this Galilean invariance was somehow somehow dealt with, like in Turyanovsky, Bilinich-Lvov or renormalization group, still the remaining problem was that the coupling constant was order one. And there was it was impossible to truncate the series. And the trouble is the fall. Here is the trouble. And as Boris said today, the name of the game is coarse graining. If we form V sub R, which is a partial Fourier transform, but not over the entire domain, but only on the domain of from K 1 over L to this 1 over R, and coarse grain, we want to derive equations for this V sub R, we generate infinite series of this kind. So we have V grad, powers of V grad, multiplied by the relaxation time. And in 2 and 3D, it's very easy, in 2 and 3D, there is only one time. According to Kolmogorov phenomenology, there is one time, so all these pieces are again order one, and there was no way to truncate. The second trouble, and this trouble is even more apparent right now due to the successes of passive scalar theorists, was that there was no feeling how one can extract. Since the flux is order one, there was no feeling how one can extract Gaussian behavior from the Navier-Stokes equations. It's completely clear that the process cannot be Gaussian, and this is not so good. Because it's very nice to have a Gaussian or mean field theory and then try to figure out how fluctuations come, how non-trivial results appear from addition of fluctuations. And this was done by a few groups, Cherskov, Falkovich, Kolokov and Lebedev, Gavetsky, Kupianin, another group, and the third one, Schreiman and Sidia, remarkably in 95. They considered two Gaussian limits, which were known before. They were given, they knew about them, and then they perturbed and found this very nice and non-trivial result. So what we would like now, but in Navier-Stokes story is not that hopeless. Why? Because it is clear that P of delta U, the probability density of delta U, cannot be Gaussian, because P of delta U because delta U cubed is not zero, and all odd orders are of delta U are not zeros. However, the second one, probability density of transverse velocity difference, is symmetric, and in principle there is no they do not carry the flux, and in principle there is no nothing precludes them from in some limit being Gaussian. So what I would like to if we want to find the parameter to find the quote unquote order parameter, I believe that the natural one is transverse velocity differences. We will try to find Gaussian approximation from the Navier-Stokes equation and see what happens. These results, years ago, Leslie Smith and myself made this, direct numerical simulations of two-dimensional turbulence. So we put force was here. We indeed found, found inverse energy cascade. The energy spectrum was very close to 5/3, and in those days we were interested in the so-called Bose condensation, which happens at the later stages. But we paid attention to the fact that the even order moments of velocity differences in this inverse cascade case were quite close to the Gaussian at various distances. And this was a new thing because we were not used to it, and we paid attention but didn't do much out of it. Recently, I think the, in the paper of Buffetta Celani and Virgasola, they made a very precise, very accurate simulations, and they indeed found that the scaling exponents of, the, of structure functions were very close to Kolmogorov. But the even more important result was that they were not able, within the within the scope, within the power of their experiment, they were not able to detect any deviations from the Gaussian statistics of transverse velocity differences. So this is which okay, this is the Gaussian curve. So and this is the Gaussian. This is the measure. So, moreover, they showed that the PDF, even of longitudinal ones, is a sum of Gaussian plus something asymmetric, but this is a different story. Now, Patrick Tabling and Jerome Paré also looked came to the same conclusion, that in 2D, a completely different system, it's a real-life experiment, no numerics, totally different stirring, and still they obtained also the normal so-called Kolmogorov scaling and the Gaussian statistics of the velocity differences. So what I will, so the plan, so the strategy which I will present right now is the following. I'll take 2D. I will see how one can obtain the Gaussian distribution in two-dimensional turbulence where dissipation terms can be neglected. And then I will add small dissipation. I will derive the model for the dissipation contributions, and I will show how one can obtain onset of intermittency, and I will so we'll see what happens. But first, we need equation. We need an equation to operate. And the Navier-Stokes okay, this is a philosophical philosophical problem, but so. So these are the velocity differences. I introduced the generating function. Generating function is simply a Fourier transform of a Fourier transform of this is a probability density. So lambda lambda is some IQ and I integrate. The most remarkable and unexpected piece of the story is that this equation is written exactly in the following form. So all this, all very bad and ugly and nasty advection terms are here. These are advection terms which are which give us problems with Galilean invariance. These are the advection terms which give us problems with the infrared divergences. They are all here. They are closed in this formulation. I have a force term here. I have a pressure term and dissipation. Dissipation dissipation will not be in 2D will be uninteresting. So this is so the pressure term I have to I have to figure out how to obtain. Now in isotropic and in isotropic and homogeneous case, we have only three variables. One is R, which stands here for eta 1. Second one is eta 2, which is lambda in the direction, in the longitudinal direction. and eta 3, which is lambda component in the transverse direction. And the equation which we wind up is this. And here I would like to pause for a second. Now, the generating function is this. So I can obtain all moments, all structure functions, just by differentiating proper number of times and setting zero, and setting all arguments equal to zero, eta 2 and eta 3. Moreover, see, I'll be interested in the limit eta 2 going to zero. So look at the equation. This term goes to zero. This term goes to zero. I'm left with something very simple. Moreover, I'm left with something which involves each term of which involves derivative over d eta 2. So in principle, if I'm lucky, I can integrate over this over delta 2 and obtain something very simple. And this will at the end this will be the reason why the Gaussian statistics can arise with non-trivial scaling in this system. So the fine result of this property, the final result of this property will be that the transverse velocity differences are governed by the Langevin equation with a non-trivial force. So that's why. Okay. Here, I have. Now, but I said that there were two, only two known, exact known relations in this business. I'll give you a third one. So if I take this and differentiate it, I take this equation, differentiate it proper number of times. First of all, I recover the known stuff. This is incompressibility condition. These are third-order structure function. This is another third-order structure function. But I also have this, and this is an exact result which has never been. Of course, it can be derived from the Navier-Stokes equation if one tries hard. But this way, excuse me. Yes, of course, absolutely. But it was. By the way, there is a nice feature here, Grisha. The nice feature here is that fourth order structure function is not coupled to the fifth or sixth order structure function or third order structure function. The fourth order structure function. Oh, try to do it. Okay, now the fourth term is this. And here is also an important piece. There is one minus cosine. So when at the very small scales the force disappears, and you can see and it can be shown that if the force disappears, you have to have dissipation term, otherwise you will not have positive solution of the equation. At the large scales, the force here. Dissipation is zero, and you can have positive solution. So already at this level, you see that in 3D the force is not needed, but the dissipation is absolutely necessary. While in 2D the force is needed, and dissipation is not there. This Frisch's book, but I knew it years before. It's Novik. It's not. Everything right is known. All correct stuff in your book is known. You're right. Okay. So now there are some symmetry relations, dpdy delta v to power 2n must be 0 and so on and so forth. All this can be written. So in 2D, I badly need a model for the pressure terms. But it is also a rather limited it is also rather limited thing, because I need the conditional expectation value of the pressure of difference of the pressure gradient for delta U and delta, for fixed delta U and fixed delta V. So what we do, we go along the path Sinai and myself took a few years ago. We expand this to all, we expand it to all orders and stop at first two terms. Why we need two terms? Because delta dV, because in compressibility dP dV multiplied by delta V, it must be equal to zero. So so the things must a few pieces must compensate. So this is the model for the pressure. So what I do with this model, I take it and plug it here. Okay, so I take this and put it in, and here it has a smell of Landau theory of physical phenomena, where you expand, you look at the result, and then you start thinking about right or wrong, but numerical data, and I hope Tosha will show it. What is predicted here is that this difference plotted as delta U delta V divided by R must give straight line. So this is the prediction, if you wish, these are the first two terms of the expansion, and we'll see what happens. Now, I know, so this is so what I also know, that in the limit of A to 2 going to 0, I have this relation and that relation. So this form of the solution satisfying this relation is this, where z and phi are phi is a symmetric function of a to 2. So if I have a first derivative of this function at a to 2 equal to 0 is 0. So basically this will, if we believe Virgasola, this will be 0. We should, yes. So the equation is this. And the solution is that it's Gaussian. So the statement is the following: in 2D, if there is no dissipation, and if this model for the dissipation fluctuations is in this so-called mean field approximation, the result is Gaussian. One can do something else. And also derive a Gaussian, but integrate the equations from left to right, from minus infinity to zero, and obtain exactly the same result. This is the equation, and this result is a Gaussian. So here we are, more or less. Do I have another 10 minutes? I don't remember when I started. 2 more minutes? Oh, God. No, but I started 10 minutes later. What? Ah, I supposed to talk 30 minutes. Okay, then no one said that I cannot ask myself a question. Okay, now... So look, hold on. Look where we stand. Because the prettiest part is coming. So look where we are. Let's say this is a space dimensionality D, and J is the flux, and D is a dissipation. We know that flux is positive when it's 3. When d is 3. We know that flux is negative when d is 2. Okay. Now, in between there should be something strange. But we know something else. We know that that here, when the flux is negative, the dissipation is irrelevant. So we have a chance that around this dimensionality, which will be discussed in a minute, where something interesting might happen. So and here I So I will define square root of d minus, okay, so let's assume that there is this d subcritical, and this will be beta, doesn't it? The first people who were interested in this critical dimensionality were to me, were Frisch and Fournier, but I've learned that before that, there was a paper by Frisch, Lisieux, and Sulem. They were also they were dealing with this with this problem. Now, in the this there was a mistake there, but in principle the work was beautiful because it for the first time people tried to look at vicinity of this strange point and obtained one very important and correct result there. So I'll do it my way, but some part of the results were done in Frisch, Lisieux, Fournier, and Sulem. So if we, as Boris said, coarse graining is important, we will show in a few minutes that near d critical, the coarse graining can be done exactly. And what you obtain, the effective viscosity, is proportional to d minus some dc to the power 1/3. And from this calculation, from this diagram, you see that this viscosity is equal to v sub r square multiplied by the relaxation time. Because the propagator is this. Now, so what we see from here is that the relaxation time is d to minus dc to 1/3 multiplied by v sub r divided by v sub r square. Okay, this is the definition of coarse graining. Yeah, this is a glorious. However, we have another relation. The flux is one. Because our force is one, we keep the force equal to one, and so delta U cube is one, and this epsilon, which is one, is also nu sub t, exactly nu sub t which we calculated before, multiplied by dvdr squared. It tells you, and this was foreseen by Frisch and company, that v sub r goes as 1 over d minus dc to 1/6. This means that v sub r grad multiplied by relaxation time, this most relevant parameter. The parameter which governs all higher-order nonlinearities appearing in the coarse graining goes as d to minus dc to 1/6, zero. Yep. No, the flux is always one because the force is of the order one. The point is, the whole point, what? No, the flux is one, but Kolmogorov constant is infinity. So the ratio delta U cube divided by delta U square to 3/2 is zero. That's what small parameter is. Yeah. No, exactly at this point? I know what happens at this point very well. There is no steady state solution and the flux is equal to zero. But about this point, you can expand very nice. Let me show you the consequence of the. Okay, fine. So the statement is that about this point, the refined similarity hypothesis is written in this form with the correction d minus dc to 5/6. That's the result, and I believe it's an exact result. So if I have a model for the dissipation, I simply put it into the equation, and I wind up with equation for the probability density after the inverse Laplace transform. Now this equation gives all experimental data I know. Maybe I don't know a lot, but so look what happens here. When at the very small scale, this dissipation term, this beta is d minus dc. This dissipation term is very important, and the solution is absolutely non-Gaussian. When this beta is zero, or this piece is not small, then solution is close to Gaussian at the large scales. And where it's not small at the large scales. So here are the results. Moreover, there is something interesting here. Delta U cube over delta U square over 3/2 is here in this formulation is d minus dc to 1/4. But if there is intermittency here, delta U square, it's multiplied by r over l delta square, where delta is a deviation from Kolmogorov. So what it tells you is the following: that for any finite d minus dc, there is always scale small enough that the intermittency prevails. Okay, so if I throw out the forcing term, this is the formula with beta equal to 0.05, which was estimated before. But this is a fuzzy constant. But when beta is 1/20, this is the formula. That's how it compared with data of Srinivasan and Chen, and this is how it's compared with Harris-Winnie's results. For 18th order, 3.63 instead of 3.59. Now, a little bit off the center, the PDF is log normal, but not all the way. It's only piece of it is log normal. Up to moment approximately 15-20, it's log normal is a very good approximation. At the very center, so take this equation and put dpdr equal to dpdv equal to zero. So we're interested in the very center. We immediately obtain p of delta V divided by delta V RMS, R to minus 0.052 versus R to minus 0.06, which Srini showed. But this is not all. The important thing is that if this beta is indeed 1/20, at the large scales, where r over l is not too small, the forcing term prevails. So the central piece at large scales is close to Gaussian, but for each and every finite beta there is always a range where intermittency dominates. So that's how this log normal. That's how the tails of the PDF look like. And Srini, I didn't ask your permission to show. Okay, fine. Srini and Dhruva plotted details of their PDF as a function of log square. This is log square. Log square, where log is, so log square is quite large, it's 10, and you can see the straight line. So log normal distribution is not so not so bad here. So I guess I guess I'll stop right now and.
Any questions
you'd like to ask yourself? Yes.
Maybe
so,
others.
First. No. What experiment was that? No, it's not private. It's DC in this calculation is 2.56. That's what I have. The question, but on this one, I wouldn't put my I'm known for bad investments, but I wouldn't put my money on this one. The important thing is that the DC does exist. So I can tell you the physical meaning of this, if you wish. But okay, you know. I think what happens here is the following: you have longitudinal component, and tending to produce a shock. You have so in Burgers they simply go like this. On the time scale, V sub R divided by V sub R, and the shock is formed. In turbulence, there is a pressure. So they start going this way, but then there is a redistribution between the components. So it starts spinning like that. They start spinning like that, and the relaxation happens not due to the formation of this shock, but due to the due to the spinning. And in 2D, the pressure is so strong that the guy starts forming the shock, and it reverses all the way back through the vortices, by the way. Enter. This beta is d minus square root of d minus dc multiplied by some factors, by some pi to all powers. Huh? What is the fitting parameter? There's no fitting parameter. What do you mean by fitting parameter? No. This is okay. Beta. Beta of square root. Square root. Yes. 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 No. 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 Here, D is larger than DC. Yes.